Hey everyone, it's Matt from No Meat Athlete, and today I have the pleasure of talking to Scott Jurek, who I'm sure you all know is a legend in the ultra-running world. He's won Western States 7 times, won Badwater twice, has the American record for the 24-hour distance, among many, many other accomplishments. So I'm very happy to be talking to him today, and Scott actually has a brand new book coming out called Eat and Run, My Unlikely Journey to Ultramarathon Greatness. So we'll be talking a little bit about that and a few other things. All right, Scott. So first, I've just got to tell you that the book is absolutely incredible. I'm about three quarters of the way done with it and massively inspired, as I knew I would be. And I'm sure I won't be the first one to mention it in the same breath as Born to Run. But I get that sort of same feeling where it's like I don't want to put it down, but it's making me really want to go out for a run. So, you know, it's a great thing. You've done an amazing job with it. So I'm sure you're proud of it.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you for the kind comments. It was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, and a lot of ways it was like running an ultramarathon. And it's been something I've put off for years. People have been asking, when are you going to write a book? When are you going to write a book? And, you know, when are you going to put out a cookbook? When's the running book coming out? And I tried to satisfy everybody with it. And it was hard to leave out one component, because two things that I used to hate, eating vegetables and running, you know, were so important in my life and huge vehicles of transformation. So it was hard to leave one of those out. And basically the book centers around my journey with both of those and the transformation that occurred. So, and then of course I threw in a few recipes. So there's a recipe in between each chapter, and there's a little bit of everything in the book. So I'm glad to hear that you enjoyed it, and I hope a lot of people do as well.
Yeah, and there's also like the little running tip at the end of each chapter, or most of the chapters as well. So it's a very cool mix that it's part a little bit of introduction to running and even ultra running, recipe book, and then of course the bulk of it is such an inspiring story. So what I think is interesting, one of the first things that struck me was when you said in the book several times that you think anyone can run an ultramarathon, and it's something that I've sort of written before and agree with, but I'm always really afraid to make that statement because I wonder if it's because I've run marathons before I did an ultra, and then I looked back and said, oh, well, that wasn't that hard. But I just wanted you to explain that a little bit. Like, how come you think anyone can run an ultra marathon?
Well, first and foremost, the human body was meant to move in a running fashion. I mean, we are running creatures. We are endurance animals as well. We have the ability to cool our bodies and go for crazy amounts of time. I mean, in the book, I talk about my cross-country ski coach, you know, long before Born to Run came out. He was talking about he and his brother would chase down deer in northern Minnesota. And so we are animals that can outlast other animals that are very fast and to us might seem to have a lot of endurance. So I think that's a fact that we can go for these ultra distances. The other component too is that running is not unhealthy. I mean, for years, people were told, you know, running's bad for your knees and running's bad for joints. And sure, if somebody has bone-on-bone osteoarthritis, I'm not advocating that they should run ultramarathons. But for the most part, if somebody doesn't have a serious musculoskeletal issue or another, you know, larger systemic type of malady, then we are able to run and run ultramarathon distances. And it really comes down to, in the end, you got to do a little training, you got to learn how to eat and drink, but what it comes down to is having that sheer will and that drive to get to the finish line, to get through all the obstacles that come along the way. So it's definitely a mental component after the physical piece is practiced and learned and then maintained throughout a race. But then it goes beyond something. That's the definition of ultra. It's going beyond, and you go beyond the body, go beyond the mind to a level of consciousness that people get in other activities, other sports, other art forms. And that's the beauty of it. That's why I keep going back. I keep going back for those glimpses of that conscious state where nothing else matters. I feel awesome. I feel like I can run forever.
Yeah, and that's something I've picked up from your writing. First of all, that, you know, that you do it to get to those states and to learn more about yourself. And I think that's why anyone who does run an ultramarathon must enjoy some of that, because there are certainly points where it's very, very painful, and but you do it, you learn about yourself, and I think that's why a lot of people do it. But the other part is that you said, you mentioned that the physical giftedness, and you said in the book that you were a 2:38 marathoner, and I mean, while that's incredible by my standards, and I'm sure most of the people listening to this, this might not be what you associate with a great champion ultra runner like yourself. I kind of gather that there are all these different things that combine to make you the legendary ultra runner that you are. And I just want to know what really, like, of all those things, there's the way you experimented with all different books, the diet, the vegan diet, obviously, this Bushido Zen sort of meditation, mindfulness, and then the willpower that you learned as a child. I mean, what of that do you think is what has made you a champion, kind of in spite of what you say is not necessarily the physical gifts that you would expect from an ultramarathon winner?
I would wholeheartedly say those elements that I learned throughout the years that I also came to realize. I mean, initially it's all about sheer challenge and, you know, on a dare from a buddy that got me out running an ultramarathon and running my first marathon. But it was tapping into these other things that I learned throughout the years. And sometimes those things weren't, you know, like Bushido, that wasn't learned in running. That was learned from my Zen master, super amazing karate sensei, Don Mukai. And even though I never took karate, he would tell me about all the teachings that he went through. And, you know, he's a 60-year-old ultramarathoner, somebody who I wouldn't train with or normally interact with, but befriended him. I'm stumbling there on that. I befriended him, and, you know, that's what I've learned about throughout the years of the sport. I've learned from people who aren't necessarily the elite runners. They're the people who have the wisdom. Sometimes they're older, sometimes they're younger, and just honing skills and learning things from yoga, learning things from my diet and my forays into taking care of my body for long-term health reasons. I mean, all of that has made me who I am as a person, as well as an ultramarathoner in that race course. And it's so much more. I mean, sure, you got to be able to deal with discomfort, and you got to be adaptable, you got to think on your feet, but there's something deeper to the sport, and I'm still figuring out what that is and how to get there. And that's why I've been doing it for 18 years.
Right. So when you talk about that something deeper, I can see how in a race, you know, Western States, and you're ahead of the best runners in the world, how you tap into that. But what about when you're running 40 miles at a relatively slow pace on, I know that's not your everyday training run, obviously, but what about when it's a 20-mile run or 40-mile run and you're by yourself and it's slow? I mean, how are you tapping into that then, or is that more of are you kind of using that as a meditative experience? I mean, you know, what are you doing that allows you to train like that so much, like you have to as an ultra runner?
Well, I think first and foremost, it helps to have goals. You know, this isn't too much Zen to it, but the fact of the matter is having Western States every year to prepare for, having, you know, all the naysayers, having my competition each year get harder and harder, and, you know, more new faces and people coming into the sport that I'm a champion. I mean, that's a huge catalyst for going out and training, and, you know, rather than just dawdling along on the trails, to train hard. And so that helps. And then the training hard, you know, facilitates the Zen-like, the unconscious training, so to speak. You know, it's that getting into the flow, the zone, however you want to refer to it as, but the working hard allows for that, I guess, foray or that that path to get cleared to the unconscious state and to that state of, like, nothing else matters, but just putting one foot in front of the other. Doesn't matter how hot it is, doesn't matter how steep the climb is. It's about tapping into that. And gosh, I mean, when you're out there for 30, 40 miles or 20 miles, you get used to playing with that. And other times, you know, I'm just like enjoying being in my surroundings and taking in the views or taking in just simple things. I mean, even running with my old Alaskan Husky Tonto, I mean, watching him move on the trail and just being a bit more primal like an animal and just being in tune with my surroundings, I think that's an important part to getting into that maybe Zen state or that just that zone. And anybody who's, I mean, we all get there at certain points. We have glimpses of it, just to make it last more. And that's the key in an ultramarathon, because you have a lot of hours out there.
All right, so let's shift gears a little bit. I mean, definitely have to talk about the diet, given that this is No Meat Athlete, and everybody here is a vegan or vegetarian athlete for the most part, or maybe just curious about it. So you said everyone can run an ultra. I mean, you know, reasonably speaking, what do you think about everyone going vegetarian or vegan? I mean, is that something that is for everyone? Like, can you say that you think almost anybody's health would improve by doing that? Or can you sort of look at the other diets, maybe not necessarily paleo, but something like that that's really whole foods based, but does involve eating meat? Just wanted to get, like, what is your take on a diet like that versus a vegan diet? And do you think that vegan diet is necessarily better for anyone's performance than that?
Well, I think anybody can be a plant-based eater, and I'm living proof of that. I mean, I grew up hunting and fishing in the backwoods of northern Minnesota. I grew up on fast food in college because I was able to afford it and could eat it. I definitely, not a million years, thought I would be a vegetarian, let alone a vegan. And I'm O positive, according to some people, I should be eating lots of meat.
Right.
But, you know, I'm surviving and I'm pushing my body to the limits. I have been, you know, since 1999 when I switched to a vegan diet, and I feel great and a lot of benefits have occurred. So I think anybody can. Now, is it the only diet out there? No. I mean, I've always taken this approach that let people kind of learn and figure out things for themselves. I mean, if somebody ate plant-based 2-3 meals a week or 2-3 days a week, ate better quality animal products when they did, reserved it for special occasions, to me, that's just as good as somebody who goes 100% vegan or vegetarian. Sure, it would be better if everybody became vegan from a lot of standpoints, you know, health, the environment, the treatment of animals. But the fact of the matter is, you know, everybody's on their own little journey and going to find out what works best for them. And ideally, we start moving people towards a diet that's lower on the food chain. I mean, humans, I think, have the knowledge now. We have the ability to grow enough food on this planet, particularly if we grew it for reasons such as, you know, eating those plants versus feeding them to other animals that we then eat. So, mm-hmm. And wild game is something I grew up eating a lot of wild game and fish, and that's not what people are getting when they go to the supermarket and buy meat these days. It's just nowhere near the quality. I mean, basically, we got to get back to eating like our great grandparents did. In my case, grandparents who, you know, had gardens, and we lived a lot off the land. But as technology has improved things, as transportation and grocery stores have opened up, it's just easy to eat other ways. And now we've got to revert back to the old ways.
Definitely, I wholeheartedly agree with that, and I love that your approach is very similar to what I think is the way to spread the message about this diet. And it's not by saying everyone should go vegan this instant. You have to, because you're killing all these animals and you're ruining the environment. I mean, your book doesn't even mention anything about plant-based diet or vegan on the cover. And I think it's a great way to do it. Just lead by example. And then once people are into it, once they are reading your story, most of them probably already know you're vegan, of course, but just seeing that you're successful with it will make someone maybe want to cut out meat for one meal a day and just go from there. I mean, I totally love that approach.
Well, thanks. And yeah, I try to relate too, because if somebody had told me that I needed to go vegan, I wouldn't have responded to that. I mean, if it weren't for individuals like Dr. Andrew Weil, who wrote Spontaneous Healing, and I, you know, picked that up because I saw in a grocery store, you know, him on the front of a magazine cover. Then later, you know, reading Matt Cowboy, you know, when a third generation cattle rancher from Montana writes a book and goes vegan and basically lays it all out there, that was really, that one hit home, because I thought, okay, this third generation cattle rancher could go vegan, so can I. So I think it's those little bits and those little triggers that get people thinking in a different fashion. I think it's just being open to new ideas, and that's helped me too on the ultramarathoning side of things. And as an athlete, I mean, I had to be resourceful, and that's what the diet has allowed me to do. It's, you know, it's been kind of these constructs to some people might say, oh, it's very a depriving way to live your life. But I look at it as it's kind of kept me, you know, it's kind of kept the constructs. It's kind of kept me focused on a certain thing versus, oh, I can just eat anything I want. It's forced me to find new foods and to try new foods, to cook with new foods. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, that's really what you have to do with paying attention to nutrition, no matter what kind of diet you're following as an athlete, an active individual. You gotta be into it. You gotta have something that keeps you striving to learn more along the way.
Yeah, and again, I agree. We talked about that last time. Just that the way that it forces you to expand the different your plate, expand what you're eating. It's not really taking something away so much as adding in such a variety of things. I mean, because you can't stop at McDonald's anymore on a car trip. I mean, it's just out of the question. So you plan ahead and you either find some great Thai place or something else, or you make your own food. And that to me is why it's been great. And it sounds like you're very similar in that way.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you can even be, I call it, you know, kind of modern foraging and gathering, or maybe even hunting and gathering as a vegan. Try navigating an airport or a rural area for food. It's actually something I kind of embrace. I mean, sure, I pack some protein powder or some staples, but I've kind of enjoyed with my travel schedule just figuring out, okay, where can I find some garbanzo beans or kidney beans? You know, somebody's got to have some. And, you know, what kind of ethnic food can I eat and still eat, you know, relatively well, even in some of the worst places, including airports and shopping malls and things like that. So it gets to be fun. You got to embrace it for sure.
Right. All right. So how about soy? In the book, you made an interesting argument for soy, especially tempeh, fermented forms of soy. When it's so fashionable now for everyone, it seems, to talk about soy having phytoestrogens and whatever else and just being all in all a terrible food. So I kind of wanted to give you a chance to get that message out there to the No Meat Athlete audience. Why are you a fan of soy?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm a fan, but I do use it. And the reason I use it is because millions of people have been eating it for centuries, if not thousands of years. So particularly in the form of tofu, tempeh, miso, I do occasionally soy protein powder that's fermented. But outside of that, I'm not doing I'm not doing any soy milk. I'm not doing isolated soy protein. I'm not doing what I would call the more heavily processed soy. I mean, sure, tofu and tempeh are processed, but they're age-old methods of preserving a food that has been a staple for so many people. So there are individuals who do have an allergy to soy, and it doesn't work for their body. Totally agree on that. But I don't see why people have, demonized soy, because look at all the cultures who survived off of it. I mean, so many people, so many cultures and civilizations wouldn't have been able to survive if they didn't figure out a way. And I think that's the beauty of nutrition, and the beauty of the human body is being omnivores has helped us do the things that we've done on this planet and live in, I guess, communities, be less nomadic. And I think a lot of people would not like to go back to the way people used to live, 2,000 years ago.
Gotcha. And then one other food that I wanted to quickly talk about was oil. I know you use oils and you think they're good, especially as an ultra runner. And that's another one that you a lot of talk in the vegan world now and other diets as well. They're highly anti oils, added oils to anything. But you mentioned the exact same thing that I noticed, and that was that when I went vegan, it wasn't a protein issue. It was a calorie issue of keeping those calories up. Mm-hmm. And oil and fattier foods like avocados, almond, things like that were the way to keep those calories up. So yeah, I just wanted to hear you talk about that a little bit. I mean, why do you like oil as a food for athletes and maybe even non-athletes?
Well, number one, it's a convenient form of calories, and the reason thousands of years ago people pressed oils because it allowed them to preserve a harvest, such as olives, various seeds that they could press. But olive oil is something that, to me, is one of the greatest gifts for human civilization, because it kept the Greeks with an energy source year round, and it was a perfect way to preserve. So, I agree. Sure, eating olives and avocados and fatty foods without pressing the oils, is definitely less, I guess you could say, processed and preserved. But if it's cold pressed, I don't see an issue with oils. In fact, they can be beneficial, particularly for the active athlete. I mean, I think a lot of the studies that have looked at whether it's cardiovascular disease and other ailments that can be, I guess, their conditions can be enhanced by decreasing the amount of oil. I firmly agree. In those individuals, oil fats might be a huge issue, but for the athlete, we're burning a lot of calories. We're going through, thousands of calories sometimes in a day, particularly an ultra runner or an ultra endurance athlete. So I don't think they're bad. And I think, again, I just look at what have people eaten over time. And we obviously have way too much fat in the standard American diet. And even in a lot of cases, a vegan plant-based diet that's heavily processed, and you can eat a lot of junk food on a vegan diet, there's no question. But for athletes, I think they have their place. There's known facts in terms of how we process oils that can be very beneficial. But it's like anything, everything, we've got to look at it in moderation as well.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm so glad to hear you say that, because when people told me I had to stop eating oil, I didn't know what I was going to do and where I was going to get those calories.
Definitely.
So I know you're busy, Scott. I know you have many, many more interviews today probably. So just one more question. I wanted to go back to running and the book. I mean, so much of the book is about the races that you won, just one after another, and it's incredible. It's inspiring to see just kind of the heart and just how competitive you were, the nature. It's very neat. And I'm just wondering what now is left for you. I mean, there's all the Western States victories, Badwater, the 24-hour record for Americans. I mean, what else does a runner like yourself, someone who's accomplished so much, I mean, what continues to drive you? And are you going after anything still, or are you doing it now for the experience and what you learn about yourself?
I definitely have a few things to check off on my checklist. I really see myself probably retiring in a few years. So when I turn 40, I'll always be involved in the sport and like to do some races that I haven't been able to fit in because I've had to focus on larger events. So looking forward to that. But right now on my docket, I'm headed to the World Championships in September, which are in Katowice, Poland, on September 8th and 9th. So I'm going back to run around a circle for 24 hours. There's something that's intriguing about that. I mean, I prefer to be in the mountains, and I'm taking a break from Ultra Trail Tour de Mont Blanc after 5 years, going over there in August and going to see what I can do on that 24-hour course. I mean, really, I have the American record, but there's something about, is it possible to break Yannis Kouros' world record on the road or on the track? And there's something about that challenge, too, with the 24-hour event. It's one that I don't know if I'll ever master, but I'd like to hone that skill a little bit more. And I only have so many big races left in me, is the way I look at it, because I've been racing hard for so many years, and mentally I know what that involves. So I'd like to do that. And there's some things, some journey runs I want to do, some point-to-point runs. Not quite sure what they are. I've always dreamt about running across the country. I've been told by some of my veteran runners that'll be the last race I do if I race across the country and try to do it. So I'm not quite sure if they're going to be, mega multi-day type things, but there's something pure about, picking a line and picking a course, that courses through a region that sounds very appealing to me. So there's a few things I want to do. I I love to be out in the mountains, love running, and I love running in the cities too, and I just learn how to, I guess, enjoy running no matter what it is at this point in my career, and I think it's a good thing. So many runners get burnt out and don't want to have anything to do with the sport. So my goal right now is to keep my interests peaked, but also just keep it fun.
Excellent. Well, I will be looking forward to following you and seeing what you do next, as I know will everyone else, not only in the vegetarian vegan community, but the ultra running community. I mean, you've been incredible to the ultra running community with everything you've done. And the book is just one more piece that, you know, really lets everyone see behind the curtain. It's called Eat and Run, and it comes out on June 5th. Is that right?
June 5th, yeah.
June 5th?
And they can check out more info and check out some photos from the book on the website, on my website, scottdurek.com/eatandrun.
Okay, good. And they can get the book pretty much any major bookstore or website that sells books?
You bet. All booksellers, essentially, online and out there, the independent sellers. Get out and grab one on June 5th.
Yeah, absolutely do that. You will not be disappointed. It's an amazing book. So thanks a lot, Scott. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
All right. Thanks, Matt.